Morning. Today, Erchin. Okay, we're going to, God willing, finish the parak this morning. Today's daf is daf Chavdal. We're back on Chav Gimel. And we are doing the sugya of Hamakdish Nechasav. We started the mission yesterday. I went through the mission yesterday. Let me just discuss some of the bigger issues, and then we'll start with the Gemara. The Mishnah talked about somebody who decided that worldly possessions are really overrated. And what point is there to own things? I mean, they're just temporary. So what better use of my worldly possessions than to be Makdish Nechasav? I'll just simply donate everything to the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously, whatever I donate to them will be theirs to sell and create some sort of revenue. Okay, good. So he's Makdish Nechasav. Yeah, is it prudent? That's a big.
I'm saying, is it allowed?
Yeah, it's allowed. Yeah, I mean, we're going to be discussing Mishnayos over and over again to discuss it. Is it prudent? Is it hashkafically okay? You know, I don't think so. In other words, to become then a burden to the community. You're right. In general, we have by the halachas of tzedakah, so they put a maximum. They cap how much tzedakah you should give. So the Gemara says that you shouldn't give al yivazvez yoster mechamish. Don't give more than 20% of your income away. One of the reasons why, this takana susha, one of the reasons why is because you start giving away your money and then you're going to need to then rely on the community. So yeah, you're right. It may not be prudent, but it's okay. Meaning it works. And there's liens on that property that you were makdish to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, when someone has a lien on a property, that basically means that they own the property, right? Try to explain to the bank, that house isn't yours, it's really mine, I bought it. We all laugh, we all know. The bank really owns it, right? And they are a lien holder on that property. You try to sell that property to somebody else, and for whatever reason, it wasn't caught. You know, the title insurance didn't catch it. So you, of course, you know, the lien holder is going to go over to the seller and say, look, you know, he tried to sell you that property. That's very nice, but I'm a lien holder. I own the property, right? And so there are liens against the property that he was makdish. So let's think about this outside for just a second. Does Hektish really get the property? And the answer should theoretically, not theoretically, but fundamentally be no, meaning it's not his property to be makdish if, in fact, there are liens on that property. So a simple example, which the Mishnah here is dealing with, is let's say he's married, right? So let's say he's married. So that's, you know, she's a lien holder on that property because if upon death or divorce, she's going to be entitled to a piece of that property. It's as satisfaction of her ksuva. So how do you go about this? So the Mishnah doesn't deal with some of the larger issues. The Mishnah deals with a detail, which, as we know, that's the style of the Mishnayos. One of the large issues, which is discussed by the Rishonim, I mentioned this at the very end of yesterday's daf, and I'll open up with this discussion over here, is that we have a rule, the Gemara Pesachim says it, the Gemara quotes the name of Rava, and that is, Hektish is a lien breaker, right? When you're Makdish something, so now that it's in the possession of Hektish, so that's such a powerful ownership, that'll break it'll break a shibud, it'll break a lien. And so therefore, even though there may be, in fact, be a pre-existing lien on that property, but Hektish basically cancels a lien, right? So that's what Rava says in the Gemara Pesachim. So over here, so before we even get into the sugya, before we get into the discussion, so you got to wonder, meaning, if he's Makdish all of his things, so with all respect to his lien holders, who cares? Meaning, isn't Makdish going to break it? So there's an important Rashi, which is quoted by everybody. Rashi, not over here, the Gemara Rashi and Pesachim. And I'm not sure if Rashi says it or if Tosfos quotes Rashi, either way. But there's an important Rashi, and Rashi says like this. That rule that Hektish breaks a lien, that's not Stam Hektish, that's not regular Hektish, that's Kedushas Haguf. Meaning, I take an animal, and let's say there's a lien on that animal, and I Makdish the animal for the Beis HaMikdash. Where now that animal is invested not just with Kedusha, but with Kedusha Saguf. Meaning that animal is going to go onto the Mizbeach, that's going to break a lien. But just a regular consecration, so that it goes to Bedek HaBayis, which basically means now it has Kedusha's Damim, that's just a regular transaction. That in concept is no different than just a regular sale. Now, of course, you sell property that has a lien on it, lien holder is still entitled to that property. So when you're matish something for bedek habayis, for just kedushas damim, same story. It's not going to, that hektish is not going to break, it's not going to break the lien, cancel the lien. Okay? So that's what Rashi says. And so obviously our case over here is talking about where it's just bedek habayis. Okay, that's a big issue. Rashi's not the only approach. In fact, you look over here, you'll see he has other approaches as well in terms of how to address it, but that's a basic approach in terms of understanding how all this is going to work. Well, you can't. You can't be Makdish my behema. You know the Makdish?
If it's a lien, it's not lien.
Right. Right. In other words...
It's going to work the same way. Just, if I'm talking about the Makdish of behema.
Right. Who, in other words, yeah, but it's, even though there's, yeah, this lien, in American law also, it's a funny thing, meaning, even when you're a lien holder, you're not the owner. You're not, I mean, in other words, you could sell the property, even though there's a lien on the property, buyer beware, meaning then the buyer's going to have to assume, the purchase of the field, and the risk involved in the fact that he's buying a property that has an existing lien on the property. Okay, I mean, I'm saying the lien hold. Yeah.
But you would assume it would be.
I think the lien is worth half the value of the animal, and then when you're makdish it, then you're only makdish the remaining part that there's no lien.
Later on this morning, we're going to talk exactly about that. About what if the piece of property, or in this case, or in the case of the animal, what if it doesn't correspond to the loan? Okay. Well, actually, that comes up later on. There could be. You could absolutely make. If you have metaltolin and you want to secure a loan with that, you absolutely can, right? We have this concept called the potiki. A potiki means you just simply point to an item that you own. You say this item over here will be security. Okay. Hamakdish shechas of aysal of ksuvasisha Reb Elazar Amer kishigena yidur hana. So Reb Elazar says we're worried. Meaning this guy over here is makdish of his properties. He had a religious moment. And then afterwards, you know, he quote unquote came back down to earth. Okay? And he said, oh, what? I just gave all my property to the Beis HaMikdash. What was I thinking? Okay? And so he's thinking to himself, okay, there's got to be a way I can get back my property. So he looks at his wife and he says, oh, perfect. Good. And so he says, here's what we'll do, honey. I'll divorce you. You'll obviously receive your ksuva, as you're entitled. You had a lien on that property, which means that you're now entitled to get the property back. And then what happens is I'll remarry you again. Good. And obviously, correct, if she wants to. And so it will only be able to rescue the property that's connected that corresponds to the ksuva.
No, but I'm saying maybe the property worth 10 times worth of the ketuva. So you only get the worth of ketuva.
Yeah, correct. Correct. This whole scheme is only going to be able to save the amount.
Like 200 zuz or something.
Whatever. Correct. Correct. Absolutely correct.
Right scheme.
Look, I mean, the guy to begin with was makdish all of his property. So, like, in other words, you know, he's there. So, in order to make sure and to prevent this from happening, so basically, we're going to impose a protective measure against to defend and support the Beit HaMikdash, which is what? Which is basically we're going to say to her, or him, I should say, I'm sorry, that when he divorces her, he says, we don't want scheming going on. So you're going to make a neder. You're going to make a vow that you're not going to remarry her. And by instituting that, so now we know that they're divorcing because they just had enough of each other. Mm-hmm. And for no ulterior motive in terms of recouping the loss.
But there is no benefit between at all, because even if he gets the ketuva, he has to give it back to his wife or keep it for his wife. So there is no benefit for him. The wife is going
to
get the
20
anyway.
No, I mean, in other words, the assumption is that they're happily married, and the assumption is, again, if they're scheming, which...
There's no need for a scheme, because if she has a ketua of 200 zoos,
right.
The ektesh should give the 200 zoos to her, no?
No, we'll talk about that...
Because he cancels it.
We're going to talk about that later on, meaning, she's actually, you're right, she's actually entitled to that, to her property. Because the scheme is in the event that they actually don't want to get a divorce, but they're doing the divorce just as a way of getting back the property. Meaning, because if they're not scheming, it means. Understood. If they are scheming, it means then that he's not really divorcing her. He's just doing it to get the property back. If it's not a scam, it means he really wants to divorce her. And of course she's entitled to her ksuva. She had a lien on that property, pre-existing his consecration of the field. Okay. We'll talk about. Yeah, so, no, well, I don't know about, I don't know, meaning it is a mitzvah to marry her, but not, in other words, he doesn't have to. There's nothing compels him to remarry her. It means to say that the Torah encourages him after divorce to say, why don't you reconsider, why don't you rethink about it, why don't you marry her again? But there's no compulsion. There's no, you have to marry her again. In other words, sometimes divorce is, you know, because they just can't get along. So Yidur Hana, so in order to prevent any type of scam, so therefore they impose that when he divorces her, he has to make a neder that he's not going to remarry her again. And the reason doing so is to make sure that the reason why they're getting a divorce is because they actually want to get a divorce. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yeshua says it's not necessary. Okay? As I mentioned yesterday, we'll go over Rabbi Yoshua. Yotzibadav Rabbi Amrashim and Gamlil, Av Ha'ariv Le'isha, B'ksiv HaSava, Haya, and then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, and we're going to impose the same fraud prevention in the case where there's a guarantor of the ksuva. Where the guarantor of the ksuva now, if in the event the husband doesn't have money, and there was a guarantor who co-signed on the ksuva, so you have to do the same thing over here. You don't want them, the husband and wife, to scam the guarantor and basically get money out of the hands of the guarantor by divorcing, collecting from the guarantor, and getting married again.
Was that common to have a guarantor?
Yeah. How common? Obviously, I can't speak to the numbers, but apparently we'll see anecdotes in the Gemara. Okay.
If the husband does the hekdesh and everything gives, and then a couple months later they decide for whatever reason to get divorced, the wife can retrospectively go back and get the even if it happens years later?
Yeah, in other words, as long as their lien is pre-existing, so then absolutely, she is a lien holder. But my kamiflagi, so the Gemara now wants to understand this machlok is between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua. What are they arguing about? As the Mishnah doesn't really provide much in terms of svara, in terms of understanding of the Mishnah, just lays out the positions. So the Gemara would like to try to understand a little bit better. Rabbi Elazar Savar, Adam Osei Kinunya Al HaEkdesh. Rabbi Elazar says, look, unfortunately people scheme, and more unfortunate is that even if it's against Hekdesh, people scheme. Okay? And Rabbi Yoshua Savar, Adam Osei Kinunya Al HaEkdesh. Rabbi Yoshua says, no, look, I'm not, the reality of life is that people scheme. Okay? That's people. However, when it comes to Hekdesh, meaning people still have a conscience. People still have some sort of, you know, line in the sand where they're going to say, look, if it's scheming somebody else, okay, you know, he schemed, so I can, in other words, you know, people justify. But if it's against Hekdesh, people say, you know, we're scamming Hekdesh? Yeah, then, no, we can't do that. Okay. So the Gemara says, well, consider the following. Rav Huna makes the following halacha. The person's dying. And he's makdish all of his nechasa because he's saying to himself, look, you know, I'm dying and I'd like to go into the next world with more zechuyos. A couple more points in my checklist, on my book. The book that he has with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And after he does that, he says, oh, by the way, mana l'ploni biyadi. Look, I'm not to show my nechassim, but you should know that item over there, that item didn't belong to me, that item belongs to somebody else. Now, man, he's believed. Chazak ein oseh kenunya ala hektesh. Now, and the reason is very simple, because we're going to assume that he doesn't scam hektesh. So, lema ketanai amar l'shmaite. What's the problem? Problem is that the way we set up our Mishnah, that's subject to a machlokas between the Tanayim. And now it comes out that what Rav Huna is saying, and Rav Huna says it unequivocally, but it comes down to what Rav Huna is saying is really subject to a machlokas Tanayim. And the Gemara is always uncomfortable with that because an Amora wouldn't say something that was controversial without acknowledging, hey, this is controversial. So low. Ad kan lo pligi ala bebari ava b'shchiv mera divrei akolin adam osei kinun yala hektesh. My time ain't adam chotev lo. So the Gemara makes the following suggestion. No, it's different. In the case of Rav Huna, he's dying. So in other words, you scheme and you scam. Why? Because you're going to benefit from it. Right. Meaning that's the whole purpose of scheming. Right? I know there's some people out there who just like the art of the scam. But those are far and few. Right? In other words, the person scams, generally speaking, because he's got something to gain from it. So this person's a shchiv meira. He's dying. He's checking out. Okay. There's no gain for him. So you can assume now that anything he says regarding his finances is in fact legitimate. Ein adam chote velo lo. A person doesn't sin if there's nothing in it for him. Right? That's, you know, it's just... Okay? In other words, we're not... We have Yetzer Hara and we are tempted, but if there's no gain, we're just not going to do it. Good. So Igadamri, so that's one explanation. So in other words, good. So we have a machlokas in our mission between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua, and there is a debate whether or not you could scam, people do scam hakdesh, but if the person's a shchiv meira, that's a different story. Okay. That's approach number one. Igadamri bebari duchonam lo pligi adam ose kenunya ala hakdesh. Okay? The Gemara makes now another suggestion. Maybe people are ready to scam and scheme even against Hekdesh. And maybe everybody agrees to that. And that's obviously a very sad comment. But the Gemara says, maybe that's our starting point. And maybe the debate in the Mishnah is just a question of how solid a neder can we impose on him where he can't abrogate the neder. Maybe that's the machlokis of our Mishnah. So it is a what the Gemara calls a neder shehuda barabim. He made it publicly. So the Ibai Zemed Kuleyama neder shehuda barabim yesh lo hafara. The Gemara says maybe everyone agrees that there is a way to abrogate a neder, to be made for a neder, even if it's barabim, even if it was made publicly. V'hachav a neder shehuda al das rabim kamifligi. Here he made it not on my consent, but on the consent of the public, meaning that the only time I'll be matir the neder is only if the public will allow me to do so. Now you need public consent. I mentioned many times, you try to get public consensus to anything, right? Nearly impossible. So in other words, such a neder cannot be broken. So the Gemara says, well, we have a statement by a Memar. If you make a neder, al das rabim, it is unbreakable. Meaning there is no way anyone could be matter such a neder because the consent of that neder is made on the public and there's just simply no way to break that. Now you want to tell me that that statement of a Memar is now subject to a machlokas tanayim? And another fundamental issue, which is the wording of Rabbi Yehoshua. When Rabbi Yehoshua and our Mishnah disagrees, what's the language of Rabbi Yehoshua? Eino tzarech. You don't need to make a neder. The way we're explaining the Mishnah now, it's not an issue of need, it's an issue of ability. In other words, we'd like him to make a neder, but if he makes a neder, it's just not going to help. So the language of the Mishnah should have rather have been Eino Moel. Elahachas of the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Meaning, it's a nice approach of the Mishnah. It's just simply not going to work. Elahacha b'she'ela dehektish kamiflagi. The Gemara here says, makes another suggestion. Maybe this is another way to explain the machlokas in the Mishnah. This is our third approach of how to understand the machlokas between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yehoshua. She'ela dehektish, meaning you're makdish. Can you ask a she'ela? Meaning, when you make a neder, you know, there are times where you say, there's a whole masechta talking about this. I made that neder. Oh, I didn't mean it. Oh, I didn't know about this. I didn't know about that. I'll go to a chacham, I'll be matir neder. Now, can you do that by hekdesh? So, as we'll see in just a moment, up for debate. But there's a position, which we happen to hold of, which says that, yeah, you could do the same thing by hekdesh as well. Meaning, I know I was just maktish this, but if I would have known about X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't have been maktish it. Meaning, what is he arguing? It was hekdesh betos. It was not by mistake. Vahatanya. And in fact, we learned in a brisa. And this vahatanya is supportive. Hamaktish achas of Aisa, love ksuvah, sisha, Rabbi Lazar, Makashu, Makashu, Yidur, Hana, Rabbi Yeshua, Amar, Nutzarech, Vahamar, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Hain, Divrei Beis Shammai, Hain, Divrei Beis Hillel. What happened in this brisa? The brisa created an alignment. An alignment between the machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel to the machlokas of Rav Elazar and Rav Yehoshua. And what is the machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Shebeit Shammai omrim hektish chalos hektish. Shebeit Hillel omrim hektish chalos eino hektish. Beit Shammai is of the opinion that if you're machta something mistakenly, meaning, oh my gosh, I was just machtish that, but I forgot about this, I forgot about that. Right? Beit Shammai's position is too bad. Right? It's unfortunate, but once you're machtish something, it belongs to hektish, even if it was done mistakenly. Okay, it's a hard position to understand. Meaning, right? It's you didn't have das, right? It was right. Okay, it's a hard position to understand.
Back to what you said, the hektish is so strong.
Right, correct. Right. It really speaks. It speaks to the strength of hektish. And so now, what do you see over here? Exactly. Meaning, the machlokas between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yoshua coordinates with that machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. According to Rabbi Lazar, so you're going to be Madir Hana, right? You're going to be Madir Hana because now we don't want any scheming to happen. According to Rabbi Yeshua, you don't need to be Madir Hana because look,
once
you're Makdish something and you want the item back, you don't have to divorce your wife, have her collect an Aksuva. You can just ask a Sheila. It could be that simple. So in other words, Einot Tzarech, now you understand, you hear Einot Tzarech, Einot Tzarech means it's not necessary, because if you really wanted the item back, you could just simply ask a Sheila. Okay. V'chein ha'yeh Rabbi Shimon Gamla Omer v'chulei. Gemara is going to tell really an unbelievable story. I mean, almost unbelievable. But I believe it. It's in the Gemara. Moshe bar Atzri arva dekalte. So the Gemara tells a story about Moshe bar Atzri, who was an arev for his daughter-in-law. Okay? Meaning, imagine this. Guy is really in financial straits, would like to marry a girl, but the problem is that he's got no money. And she says to him, look, this all sounds well and good, but you got no money, you're going to write me a ksuva on what exactly am I going to be able to collect upon death or divorce? Okay. Ksuva does take romance out of the entire marriage equation, but okay, it's practical, it's pragmatic. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You gotta be pragmatic. So here, his father, we'll see in just a moment, by the way, the son's Rav Huna, his father intercedes and his father says, you know what? I'll guarantee the ksuva. Okay? So in other words, smoch alai, dad co-signs on the ksuva. He's an arev. He's a guarantor of the ksuva. So have it. V'Rav Huna berei tsurba merebanan hava. Now, this, the groom in question is none other than Rav Huna. The Rav Huna? I don't know. As we know, there are a number of Rav Hunas in the Gemara, but could be the Rav Huna. And he was a Talmud Chacham. And the Chikalei Milsa, and even after he got married, still in financial woes. By the way, that means, I mean, just if you fill in the blanks to the story, like read between the lines, that means that Rav Huna's father was wealthy, and Rav Huna was not getting supported by his father.
You mean father or father-in-law?
No, father.
In other words, the daughter-in-law was being guarantored by her father-in-law, which means it's Rav Huna, right? It's Rav Huna's father. So it does mean then, it's a little bit odd, that Rav Huna's father was wealthy, right? Yeah. Wealthy enough that he was able to guarantee the ksuva, but let his son live in poverty. Okay. Okay. Amar Abaye Leika. I'm sorry. Edechik Le Milsa. So Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, you know, poor Rav Huna. And in this case, I mean it literally. Poor Rav Huna. So can somebody please help Rav Huna? Maybe suggest some advice to Rav Huna. And Amar Abaye Leika Denasve Eitzavala Rav Huna. What's the advice that I would like to suggest to Rav Huna? Ligrish Le Devasayu. Listen, let him divorce his wife. That way she can collect the ksuva from her father-in-law, who is a co-signer, who is a guarantor of the ksuva. And then let him remarry his wife. Okay. And then, now, are we hearing what just happened over here in the Gemara? Meaning, we're basically, someone's suggesting to Rav Huna, why don't you scheme your father? Okay, scam him. And anyway, he deserves it because, you know, he's not supporting. I added that. The Gemara doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, right. So, Amale Rava. Now, Vaha Anan Yidor Hana Atanan. So the Gemara starts off with a technical issue. Wait a second, you can't do that. When you write, the Chachamim already beat you to this idea, and the Chachamim said that anyone who wants to divorce his wife has to make a neder that he's going to not going to marry her again. The Abaye had to call them a Megarish, Bebe Din a Megarish, and the Gemara gets even more unbelievable. Where Abaye says, listen, Rav Huna, right, and gives him a little nudge. You don't have to divorce in a Beis Din, meaning you could, you know, have a nice, quiet divorce. You know, nobody knows about it. Okay, a lot of controversy over here in this line of the Gemara, meaning it sounds clearly from the Gemara that you can get a divorce outside of Beis Din. Now, obviously, you need two witnesses, meaning there's, you can't have a divorce without two witnesses. Two witnesses need to sign on the get, but the Gemara is making it sound over here that divorce outside of Beis Din can be done. And as a general presumption and assumption, we assume that you have to divorce in front of a Beis Din. We always put a Beis Din together for a divorce. Meanwhile, it stands from here that it's not absolutely necessary. Okay, up for another discussion another time, but just something to be aware of. So Abaye says, you know, you don't have to get divorced in a Beis Din. So, you know, you may not have to go through this whole, you can circumvent the whole neder obligation. L'sof igla milsa de kohen hava. Now, someone reminded Rav Huna, you know, Rav Huna, wonderful idea, but it's not going to work for you because you, Rav Huna, you're a kohen. So once you divorce her, that's it. End of the story. You can't remarry her. And Amar Abaye, Buster Anaya, Azla Aniyusa. And Abaye gives one of those old expressions, one of those great old expressions, that poverty seems to follow the poor. And yeah, in other words, Rav Huna is just, he's got that kind of mazel. I know Rav Shachter just spoke about it yesterday, but Rav Huna just seems to have that kind of mazel where, you know, he just, he can't get a break.
Wasn't the Rav Huna with the moths and the blood and he had moths?
I don't know. Meaning, right, I'm also curious to know, like, which, is this the Rav Huna? The Umi Amar Rabbi Yachva Amar Rabbi Yezer Rosh Arun Zeh Mas Yetzalim Korban Nechassim Kereshim and Gamliel. So the Gemara says, wow, do you see what Abaye just did? Abaye just basically told Rav Huna, Rav Huna, I'd like you to scam.
Abaye.
Right. It's, and this is the Abaye, meaning, you know, you could talk about, you know, the Rav Huna or maybe another Rav Huna. And to my knowledge, there's only one Abaye. And Abaye is basically telling Rav Huna, go ahead, scam your father. The Gemara says you can't do that. And the Gemara says that if you're Masi Eitzalim Korb Nechas Moshem and Gamliel, you're a Rasha Arum. You're a wicked person. And Abaye now advising Rav Huna to scheme is a Rasha Arum. It can't be. Can't possibly be. Now, I'm not going to go through right now the whole discussion of what the Rav Shimon Gamliel halacha is and how he scammed like Rav Shimon Gamliel. For now, I'll tell you what. It's own separate discussion of what it actually is. I understand it's basic Shan the Gemara, which I'm not providing right now, but just right, let's just stay with the flow of the Gemara. So the Gemara wants to know, how can he advise Rav Huna to do what he's suggesting? So the Gemara gives two reasons why this case may be, it's okay to advise. Number one, Berei Shani. Number two, Tsurba Merabanan Shani. Number one, it's his father. Meaning he's not looking to scam an outsider. In other words, it's his father. Meaning, I think what the Gemara is saying, okay, you may not. Meaning that really the father wants to help his son. The father's not supporting his son. It's kind of like with the Rambam we quoted just the other day. Meaning the Ratzon HaPnimi, the father really does want to help out, but, you know, for whatever reason, you know, relationships are complicated. Family relationships are really complicated. For whatever reason, dad is not supporting his son. So, buddy, if there was some sort of ruse in order to encourage dad to support the son, like what we're discussing over here, so maybe that's not a bad thing. Two, says the Gemara, Tam and Chacham, meaning, right, the Chafetz Chaim speaks a lot about this in his, when he talks about the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, meaning the importance of giving tzedakah not just to people, but to people who are engaged in the study of Torah, so and to yeshivas. So he's a Talmud Chacham. So that also would be another exceptional reason why this, in this particular case, it's not a bad thing what he was suggesting.
Okay.
Again, the Gemara is not so clear in terms of why it is okay. Rabbeinu Gershom, can I quote? Rabbeinu Gershom writes, it's the last line of Rabbeinu Gershom. I have it underlined. So the Rabbeinu Gershom writes, Breishani, desof sof davar raihu liyorsho. Meaning, right, Rabbeinu Gershom says, look, it's going to end up being his money anyway. Right? So that's Rabbeinu Gershom's explanation of why it's not so bad. Two, Rabbeinu Gershom continues to write, V'tzubar me'abanachani de mitzvah lasio etzik deshiyol nechasim v'yasok b'torah. Meaning that if somebody's engaged in the study of Torah, right, similar to what I just quoted by the Chafetz Chaim, someone's engaged in the study of Torah and there's a way of you being able to support him or giving him advice for him to be supported so that he can continue learning in Torah, so the Gemara says that's also fine. And there's nothing, mind you, there's nothing illegal going on over here. It is a scheme, certainly, but there's no illegal activity going on. Okay. And he couldn't. He was a Kohen. He would like to have done it, but he just couldn't. Okay. The tapeklay de arid diksuva lo mishtabek. The Gemara says, can we just talk for a couple of minutes now about another big issue, which is the following. You're a guarantor of iksuva. Are you really a guarantor? What does that mean? Yes or no? So as we're going to see in just a moment, the Gemara's conclusion is going to be, I'll start with the end and then we'll work our way backwards. The Gemara's conclusion is going to be you're not really an arev. Meaning, you have a friend who's right now going to get married, but right now he's got financial issues. So you simply go along to them. You sit down with the potential husband, the potential wife, the bride and the groom, and you say, "Look, go for it, get married." Oh, money's an issue. In other words, you don't have money to write a ksuva. You know what? Smoch alai, I'll guarantee it. You don't really mean it. You're just basically there promoting marriage, okay? In other words, for a shibud, for a arevus, for real arevus, you need like a real commitment. You're doing this basically to promote marriage, and think about it. Are you being a bad guy right now? No. First of all, you're promoting marriage. Number two, you're not causing anyone a loss right now. Meaning, yes, it's true. Later on in life, if there is death or divorce. So then he's going to have to pay and he doesn't have money. But you know what? Right now, she's not losing. And it's just a good expression. When you get to that bridge, you'll cross it. Meaning, but right now, there's no actual loss being created by this arevus. So you know what? An arev of iksuva, the Gemara will conclude, isn't a real arev. So the Gemara wants to know now, if that's all true, so how did you understand our entire discussion? Right? With Rav Huna and his father. Right. So the Gemara's answer is, right? Shani Tevetepek Le Darv Diksuv LaMishtabe. We're now on the top of Chaf Gimel Medeis. Kablan Hayam. So the Gemara's answer is, he wasn't just a regular Arev, he was an Arev Kablan. You go to the Gemara, end of the Gemara in Baba Basra, right? The whole Sugi of Arevus is the last pages of Baba Basra. Baba Basra, 176 blot of Gemara, it's like page 175, 176, so deal with the halachas of arevus. You've taken on not just an arev, but an arev kablan, meaning you've formally committed yourself to guarantee and to co-sign. And so, even in this scenario, you're on the hook. Hanich lamandamar kablan afagav deleis nechasim love mishtabed. Elamandamar islay mishtabed leis lo mishtabed. Michael Amemar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there happens to be an opinion that even when you're a kablan, but at the time. The Lova didn't have any money. So you're not really mishtabed yourself, meaning you're just doing it to promote marriage. So the Gemara makes a suggestion, well, maybe Rav Huna did have money at the time of marriage, which means that the co-signer was sincere in that commitment of co-signing, of guaranteeing the ksuvah. Or the Gemara makes another suggestion. Again, this is Rav Huna's father. And because it's Rav Huna's father, so that when he was Meshabed, even though generally an Arevus over Ksuva is not created Shibud, this does because it's dad. De Itmar, and the Gemara now goes back another step and goes over this Machlokas. Arev de Ksuva de Vrakola Meshabed. If you're just a guarantor of Ksuva, you're not really committing yourself. Again, I repeat what I said a couple moments ago. You're just promoting marriage, which is a wonderful thing, which is a good thing. But you're not really creating a financial obligation upon yourself. Kablan de Balchov de Vrakol Mishtabed. Now, if you are a kablan of a regular loan, meaning a guy needs to borrow money. The lender's not lending because the borrower doesn't have money. And now you co-sign, and not only do you co-sign, you guarantee the loan, but you accept, you're a mekabel. In other words, you make a formal commitment. I'm not just a guarantor in name. I'm really there that if in the event he can't pay, I'm going to be there. So you're meshabed. That creates a real shibud. Now, what if you're just a regular arif for a loan? Or what if you're an arif kablan for ksuva? Subject to a debate. So one position is, only if the borrower or the husband had money, then does the guarantor assume to take on that role of arev, of guarantor. And some are of the opinion, no, that even if the husband or the borrower has money, the guarantor does not formally take on the commitment of being a guarantor. The Gemara says that the halacha is an arev, a guarantor. Even if he's just a regular guarantor, not an arev kablan, just a regular guarantor, he assumes the risk of being a guarantor. He will be on the hook if in the event your borrower is unable to pay the loan. Lebar me arev de ksuva, with the exception of ksuva, alfagav de israel lo mishab, in maitam em mitzvah kav, elo velo mi de chasrei. Because as I explained from the beginning of the whole discussion, if you're guaranteeing the ksuva, all you're doing is just promoting marriage. Nobody's losing right now. You're not causing a loss to anybody. You're assuming that they're going to be married and happily married until, you know, ad me'av esrim, until 120 years. So you're just doing a mitzvah, and so therefore you're not really making commitment of arevus. Okay. How gavar de zavninu l'nichsei, v'kagarsha l'devasayhu. Okay, good. We move on now to the next part of the discussion. A man sells his property, okay? And while he sold that property, he was married, which means now that there's a lien holder on that property. That lien holder, in this case, comes in the form of his wife. Okay? And then afterwards, he divorces his wife. So, this is a really simple, straightforward question. Okay. Do you need to worry about scheming in this scenario? Well, I mean, we had our Mishnah. Our Mishnah gave two examples of scheming. One example when a person was makdish and nechasav, and the other example of the Mishnah was an arev, a guarantor. Okay? This is such a straightforward case. This is just a regular sale of his property. So now, if and when he divorces his wife, and his wife now, who is a lien holder of that property, who is entitled to that property, are we worried that maybe the whole reason of that divorce is to basically get the property out of the hands of that seller? Oh, okay, good. Right? Perfect. So, consequently, essentially what the Gemara's question is that when they get a divorce, do they have to make a neder? Okay, simple. Simple, very straightforward question of the Gemara.
The lien holder of the property?
Sure.
And then they get divorced.
Which means then that she'll be able, assuming there's no other property, she'll be able to take the property out of the hands of the buyer. Okay, good. And then maybe they'll get back together again, married and live happily ever after. Right? Successfully now defrauding the buyer. Okay. Right. Separate discussion in terms of right. I'll tell you what. It's a good point. For now, we'll just leave it suspended. Shachar Rav Yosef Bar Yehuda Rav Lakami Rav Papa Arev Tanan Hektish Tanan Lokech Mao. So in other words, look back at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah gives a scenario of a guarantor. Our Mishnah gives a scenario of Hektish. Our Mishnah doesn't talk about a regular Lokech. Amalei Tanak Yiruch Lenechsha Venezel. So he says, do you think the Mishnah is a peddler? Meaning, when the Mishnah gives you rules, the Mishnah doesn't go over every single scenario. The Mishnah gives you highlights, and it's our responsibility and duty to understand the underlying points of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not a peddler, a rochel, right? Just simply now, in other words, the Mishnah's there. We're the one who has to schwitz and sweat over the Mishnah. And we have to figure out what the Mishnah is talking about. And the Mishnah is not going to go over every scenario. So, meaning, yeah, in this case is here as well. Same story. You're going to, if the husband is going to divorce his wife, and there's a property that was sold, and she had a lien on that property, so that means that when they divorce, you're going to have to make a neder in order to ensure that there was no scheming involved. Nahardai army did not tanan delo tanan lo tanan. Now the yeshiva of Nahardai disagrees. No, it's only the examples of our Mishnah. Amr Mishar Shamai time did Nahardai. Now Ben, get ready because you're going to be right. What's the reason behind the yeshiva of Nahardai? Bishlam hektesh mishum revach de hektesh. Look, in the case of hektesh, you know what? Our job is to protect hektesh, meaning hektesh needs money, and it's our job, our collective job, to make sure that hektesh never gets scammed. And Arev Nami Mitzvah Hudavid Velav Midichasrei. And in the case of Arev, look, we're interested in protecting him as well. Why? Because he's doing a mitzvah. And so, you know, right, I know the rule is no good deed goes unpunished, but we'd like to protect the Arev as he was involved in doing a mitzvah of promoting marriage. Elokeach Michti made the Adikochav Echadika Allah Ksuva. Amai Nezov and Isben, Iu Hudavsid and Nafshe. And basically, the Gemara invokes the rule of buyer beware. Meaning, you know, right, pretty much, guys are married. So, and now you know, every time you buy a piece of property from a guy, you know that you run the risk of the lien holder, i.e. his wife, at a later point in time coming and collecting that property, as she is a lien holder. So basically, you bought a property knowing that there was a lien holder on that property.
Yeah.
That, buyer beware, that was your fault. And so... if there is another piece of property, we will never go after purchasers if there are nechasim b'nei chorin, if they're free and clear properties. Right? You're 100% correct. The only scenario that this all would come true is only that this was the last piece of property that he had, that he ended up selling. Still, we're going to say, buyer beware. You should have known better. You should have been smarter. We say to the buyer. Look, you're Makdish, you're Nechasim. And there were liens on that property. Okay? Now, the lien holder, either the case of the woman or regular creditor, doesn't matter. In actuality, just simply goes over to Hektish and says, look, Hektish, right? I'm really sorry, but that wasn't his. I have a lien on that property. So that means now that he could just simply take it back. The Mishnah says, no. It's not that simple. Meaning everything I said is correct, but you just simply can't take it back. What you're going to have to do is give a nominal amount of money and quote-unquote be poded, redeem it. Now, hiktish tishamana v'haya chova me'amana. What if your makdish... 90 mana, and the obligation is 100 mana, right? I told you, Aaron, it was coming up. Here it is. Here you have a scenario where the obligation exceeds the property, right? Not by a lot, right? 90 versus 100. He had 90 mana worth of property, and there was an obligation outstanding of 100 mana. Mosif o dinar upo des nechasim. You add a dinar, and you redeem the nechasim. All right, who adds the dinar? Machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos. Take a look at the second Tosfos on the page. Who actually has to give the dinar? Right now, the point is very simple again, that you can't just simply take it away from Hektesh. You have to quote-unquote redeem it, again, just a nominal amount. So, halo amanas liten li'ishik suvel abachov, I'm sorry, mosev o dinar upodes nechasem ha'elu, amanas liten li'ishik suvel abachov eschovam. So, lama li lamem rapod de pod, mishum de rabbi abau, dam rabbi abau, shalo yomru, Hektesh yotzei, below Pejon. And why? Meaning, if you're a lien holder on this property, either you're a woman who has a ksuva obligation, who is entitled to your ksuva payment, or you're just a regular creditor. So the truth is that it's yours. You're entitled. So just because he was makdish the property is not going to remove your lien on that property. So why be poda? So the Gemara says, if you will, the Gemara doesn't use this terminology, marasayan. Basically, it doesn't look right. You're just simply, again, the casual observer is going to watch you just simply take away property from Hektesh. Now, you're entitled. It's yours, but it just doesn't look right. So therefore, you give a nominal amount. We're going to discuss that in just a moment.
How can somebody give something to Hektish that doesn't belong to him?
Right. So again, this goes back to the discussion we had earlier this morning. When someone has a lien on that property, it's still yours.
Right.
It's still your property. It just, and you can sell that property if you want, but just know that that lien holder has every right to that property. So in this case, he didn't sell the property. He was makdish the property. Same basic story. He could be makdish it, but then the lien holder has the right to go ahead and to just simply take it back. Now, the Gemara points out, this goes against Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no property ever serves as security for a loan unless the property is at least the amount of the loan. Right? In other words, you lend somebody money. If that property, right, you just simply say to the bank, look, I need you to lend me. I know this property is only worth $100,000, but do me a favor, lend me $500,000. So the bank will laugh, and the bank will say to you, you know, have a nice day. Meaning they will, right, they won't do that.
They did in 2005.
So much for my very, very confident and bold statement of they won't do that. Okay. Okay. I'm so happy. I follow this financial talk, meaning I'm not sure if a number of years ago I'd be following all this, but I do follow. So anyway, let's talk now about a common sense lender. Your common sense lender, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, will never look at any property as security for a loan if that property is not equal to the loan. Good. Okay. So Rav Shimon Gamliel should have been in charge of the banks. I mean, then we would have been much better off. So Kineged Hekdesh, Poda Ve'imlav, Eino Poda, and if not, you're not Poda. Meaning, and so that means then that if there was a loan and the loan exceeded the property, property is not mortgaged against that loan. That means then, so how do we view the loan? The loan was lent on pure trust. Emuna. That means then that the property does not have a lien on it. Good. That's all the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Virabanan. Now, our Mishnah doesn't hold like Rav Shimon Gamliel, because what does our Mishnah say? The property was worth 90. The loan was 100. Right? So you see that in our Mishnah, even if property doesn't equal loan, still the property is mortgaged against the loan. Good. Now, how much of a discrepancy, what ratio are we comfortable with? We know 90 to 100. Okay? So that means that if property is 90% of loan, property is still viewed as security for the loan. At what point do we say property is security for the loan? Ad kama, Amar Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshes, ad palga, up until half. As long as property is, right, LTV, loan to value, as long as, in this case, it's property to loan, as long as property is half as much as the loan, so then it is considered security for the loan. Shita Mekubetzis explains, right, and we have another Gemara that says, that's, in other words, you know there's a general rule, eino na bakarka. There's no such thing as defrauding in terms of properties, right? Why? Because property prices fluctuate unbelievably. And it's hard to put your finger on what is the market value of properties. I know we try, but it's hard to put your finger on it, so there eino na bakarka. At what point do we say, is there ever come a point in time by properties that we say, oh my gosh, you got ripped off? So the general rule is, yeah, if you pay more than twice the amount of the property, we basically say, oh, that was absurd, you got ripped off, right? Even by karka, there is a threshold at which point we say that there was or not, there was defrauding. Shita Mekubetzis says that's what's going on over here. Meaning that when somebody lends money over a piece of property, and that property is only half of the loan, he'll say to himself, I can do it. Meaning, I can look at that property as security for the loan. Either property is only half the value of the loan, I'll find a buyer who will pay up to twice as much as a loan. But once you're beyond that point in time, once the property is not doesn't even make half of the loan, at that point in time, you can't view the property as security for the loan. And now basically, how do we view the loan? Emuna. Meaning that loan was given out of trust. It was not a secured loan. Okay, unfortunately, we have to stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. We'll start with the Mishnah, finish the sixth perek tomorrow, and start the seventh perek of Erechin.